I flew to Denver last week to speak with you because I became so enraged after reading that you were not supporting the Human Life Personhood Amendment, and in fact may even be undermining it. If this is true, shame on you for using innocent children for a political benefit. This amendment could end abortion. Well, welcome to Bob Enyart Live. My name is Brian Rohrbaugh, setting in for Bob. I'm the president of American Right to Life. And that little quote from a letter that I just read is what we're going to talk about today. In fact, I'm going to read from several letters that were just given to me. And I hope the importance of this is understood. This is someone who was so impacted by this personhood amendment and what's going on here in Colorado that they are confronting another group about what they are doing. And so some Christian leaders like to call me rogue and divisive. But I'll tell you something. When you can't tell the good guys from the bad, then division is necessary. And today, I think this is an example of why it's necessary. A couple of questions. Do pedophiles, the people who molest children, do they deserve privacy? As we read the excerpts from these letters, just think about that question. Now, when I read these letters, I want you to know I have left out the names of the innocent from now. And there's a reason for that, but I'm going to use some of the names. So these letters, I'm not reading them completely. I am leaving out different parts of them, but nothing that changes the context. And by the way, Bob is at Walmart today at 32nd and Youngfield, and he's collecting signatures. He'll be there till at least 4 o'clock. So if you haven't signed the personhood amendment, this is a great time to go meet Bob. If you have signed it, this is a great time to meet him there and help him collect signatures. We are running out of time. There's only a few days left to get enough signatures, and we're close. And your signature could be the one that makes a difference. So today would be a great day to go out there and join Bob, collect signatures, sign it for yourself. Now, on these letters, think about this. Think about who you think this letter is written to. And then think about this also. Are the questions that this person is asking reasonable? And then secondly, are the answers that were given reasonable? So first, let me start with this letter. It was written on April 23rd, 2008. My cousin and I had two meetings this past week on April 15th and again on April 17th. At the Tuesday meeting, we were told that they would help us with our request for information. 2 days later, at the Thursday meeting, we received an apology and were told that they had just found out that you own the files for Neil Hewitt, and therefore they could not provide us with any information. They have directed me to write to you regarding information from the file of Neil Hewitt, former priest of the Annunciation Parish in Leadville, Colorado. And the letter continues. My brother died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. He wrote a handwritten letter addressed to Neil Hewitt indicating the exact nature of Hewitt's sexual abuse perpetrated on him as a young boy. I found this letter among my brother's belongings after he committed suicide. I know you've already seen that letter. Please see the attached letter that you had written to my cousin at that time when she requested information regarding Neil Hewitt. And what had taken place here is another family member had asked for information about this priest and was denied that information. So the letter continues, you wrote that such information would only be made available if his immediate family came forward. Of course, the pain over his suicide is still almost more than I can bear, even to this day, and I haven't had the strength to proceed until now. I flew to Denver last week to speak with you because I became so enraged after reading that you were not supporting the Human Life Personhood Amendment, and in fact, may even be undermining it. If this is true, shame on you for using innocent children for a political benefit. This amendment could end abortion. And by the way, this amendment really could end abortion. And that's why it's so important, if you haven't signed it, to be involved in it. And I'm going to continue with the letter. Early in my nursing career, I was asked to remove an aborted baby from a hospital basin and put it into a biohazard bag to discard it like trash. I was horrified to see that tiny, innocent child dead, and I refused. From that moment, the sanctity of human life was burned into my heart, and I have fought to see abortion brought to an end. I always believed that you were a stalwart for life, but now your actions remind me of how my brother was also treated like trash, as he was cruelly harmed by Neil Hewitt and finally took his own life after years of self-loathing and destructive behavior. I now have come to the realization that your pro-life positions are hollow and meaningless. Your true beliefs regarding the life of the unborn, the handicapped, and my brother have now become clear. You don't care about saving children, and your cowardly actions opposing personhood do not honor the God of the Bible. As you know, a pattern has developed in other cases where priests have molested children and then have been moved to protect them and the church, with no regard given for any child. Now think about that. What she's writing about here is that in other cases where priests have been child molesters, they have actually been relocated by the church and their crimes have been covered up. The children haven't been moved to protect them. The priest has been moved and then other children have been victimized. And I think that's what she's referring to here. So I'll continue with the letter. I suspect my brother was also a victim of this kind of fraud. And then it continues. Now, please keep your word and take the time to review Neil Hewitt's file and respond to these questions in a timely manner. And here are the questions. Was Neil Hewitt ever transferred or relocated as a priest to another parish after any accusation of sexual misconduct or abuse? Question 2. When were you, the Catholic Church, first informed of accusations against Neil Hewitt regarding any sexual misconduct? Question 3. What was the nature of those accusations? Number 4. Was Neil Hewitt ever investigated, and what were the results? In addition, what actions, if any, were taken? Before this year, was Neil Hewitt ever reported to the authorities for this or any similar crimes? Now, that's quite a letter. And, you know, that letter is based on some very, very serious circumstances that have happened to this family. Starting with a brother who was abused by a priest after a family tragedy, and the priest who the family thought was helping him cope with this, ultimately it turned out that priest was molesting this young boy. And so this family, after the suicide and after all the horror of living through that, has started asking for answers. And the first questions were asked by her cousin a few years ago, and no answers came from that. But now, because of the personhood amendment and because of the desire to protect innocent children, these two things have been drawn together. And I should mention this, that the Catholic Church and really countless churches across Colorado, many, many Catholic, many Protestant, are the reason this personhood amendment is so close to getting on the ballot. So when I'm reading these letters, I want you to understand that I have many, many close friends who are Catholic and a great love for them. But what we're talking about today, this is a leadership issue. This is something that must be addressed, and the biblical values that should be used to address it, I don't think they exist here. And so I want to continue on as I read the letter in response to that first letter that I just read. It starts out, "I admire your commitment to the pro-life cause, and the story you shared from your nursing career is chilling. We believe in the sanctity of the human person from conception to natural death, and that will never change. In your recent letter to me, you express frustration in part because we do not support the current personhood amendment. The stated goal of that legislation is laudable and consistent with our convictions about the sanctity of life. But a variety of reliably pro-life legal counsel regards the legislation as seriously flawed. We are not alone among national and Colorado pro-life veterans in this judgment. In fact, to my knowledge, Focus on the Family, among others, has voiced similar reservations. In the simplest of terms, we have been informed that even if the legislation were to pass, the Supreme Court will strike it down because of legal inadequacies. And this will be a serious pro-life setback. Still, the decisions with regard to this legislation have been challenging, and I respect your difference of opinion." So let's think about what we just read here for a moment. This leader in this church has turned over the authority for deciding right and wrong to what he calls a reliably pro-life legal counsel. And then he says that Focus on the Family, among others, also aren't supporting this. Isn't that kind of like saying, well, the Nazis killed Jews, so it must be okay to kill Jews? I mean, isn't that really a wicked statement? You know, the idea that other people aren't doing what's right, so we shouldn't do what's right. You know, that's something that we as Christians need to talk about, we need to expose, we need to question. So let's think about this. He mentions a reliably pro-life legal counsel. And yet in the sentence above it, he says he supports the idea of personhood, that from the moment of fertilization, you're a person. Presumably, he thinks then that you would have a God-given right to life and that you should have legal protection under this country's laws. But I'd like to know, because we don't know who this attorney is, but has this attorney ever done anything for personhood? Or do you suppose this is just one more of the national right to life type lawyers who has promoted laws that end with, and then you can kill the baby? See, I don't know. We don't have enough information. But I don't think that this sounds any different than what James Bopp, the attorney from National Right to Life, has written. And we know Focus on the Family was distributing that, his 11-page memo. And by the way, if you want to hear my opinion of the memo, you can go to AmericanRightToLife.org, and you can read an article I've written that's called The Legacy of Judas. And it uses a biblical platform to talk about how we should be acting. But if we look at what he's saying, this legislation is flawed. You know, what's flawed about it? There's nothing in this letter that indicates what's flawed about it. We have spoken to many prominent attorneys that work for personhood, and they don't find any flaw in this. You know, the other thing is, if the Supreme Court's going to strike it down, you know, I have to question, which one of you has that knowledge? You know, we've been hearing for a long time from so many of these pro-life, and I'm doing that in quotes, pro-life attorneys, that we have four pro-life Supreme Court justices, and all we need is one more. So if they really believe that, wouldn't they support this personhood amendment under the premise that we're likely to get one more by the time this would ever get there? You know, it's amazing to me the statements that are thrown out there and not challenged. But as you can tell, I'm challenging the statements. And then what about this business that there's legal inadequacies in this? Now, that's kind of a new twist. I don't think that's the regular thing that we're hearing by people who oppose it. But I'd like to know what those are. And saying it would be a serious pro-life setback, how could doing anything that honors God, that promotes God's command of do not murder, that says every child is valuable and has a God-given right to life, that points out that even the child of a criminal has a God-given right to life, how could doing that ever be a serious setback? And consider what these letters are about and who's writing them, and keep that in the back of your mind as we go on. So let me continue with the rest of this letter. And as I said, I am leaving parts of this letter out. So I'm not doing it to change its context. I'm doing it because there's people mentioned in here that really, at this point in time, there would be no reason to identify them. So I'm going to continue with this response letter. Neil Hewitt has been out of ministry for many years. You are free to contact him directly or bring this matter to the police. Have you done so? Now think about that. Let me go back over this. This young man, whose father had just died, had been befriended by a priest. The family thought that was a good thing. They trusted the priest, and it turned out that he molested this young man. Ultimately, this young man committed suicide because of what had happened in his life through this abuse. And yet you have the nerve to say you are free to contact him directly or bring this matter to the police? Well, what about you? Didn't you have the obligation to go to the police when you first heard about this? And what about this question of was he ever moved? Were there ever any allegations against him? What about those questions? You try to write in here as if somehow the church isn't involved in this. This wasn't some neighbor who did something terrible. This was someone who represented you. I'm going to continue with the letter. In the meantime, we have a duty within the bounds of the law to respect the privacy rights of all people, clergy or lay. You should know that we apply this rule without exception. For instance, if Mr. Hewitt were to request his own file, ask questions about who has written to me about him, or if anyone has complained about him, we would not share that information with Mr. Hewitt. Rest assured, we would not tell him of your approaches to us, nor would we share your brother's letter that you gave us, allowing any access to this very sensitive and personal information would defeat the privacy of all the people who communicate with us. And then it continues. We respect the privacy of all persons involved. Wow. You respect the privacy of all persons involved. So the privacy of a pedophile molesting children is something that you respect? There is a double-edged sword here, and it needs to be talked about. If this man did these crimes and is guilty, he has no right to privacy. If this is a false accusation, the accuser has no right to privacy. Which part of the Bible said privacy will set you free? Where in the world did you find privacy in the Bible? When does a criminal have the right to privacy? For that matter, when does a family have the right to look the other way when a family member is hurt by someone else? This whole concept seems absolutely secular, but it doesn't seem like it has a biblical basis to it. And this other, on the previous page, there was a comment here. I find this really interesting too. It says, in the meantime, we have a duty within the bounds of the law to respect the privacy rights of all. Now, what about the bounds of the law? Did you have a right not to investigate this guy? Did you have a right to decide? I don't know if you moved him or not, but did you? Did you move him to keep him out of the spotlight for his actions? Were other people injured? If you're going to bring the law into this, then bring the law into it. Talk about what your obligation was and help this family to understand what happened to their brother and to deal with all of the lingering pain and suffering. And I'm going to continue with the letter. It's almost over. It says, I certainly do keep my word to whomever I give it. But with all due respect, your letter contains a misstatement because we have never met, corresponded, nor spoken. Well, I think that's true. I mean, I think that probably they never met and probably haven't spoken at this point in time. But I think what that first letter referred to was a letter written by her cousin asking for information a while ago. And this letter was actually written back in 2004. And I want to read part of this letter to you because I think that a reasonable person would take from this letter that they could expect some kind of help. But you decide on this. And this is just part of the letter. It says, I think you already know that I cannot discuss a matter like this with anyone who is not a victim or a member of a victim's immediate family. We would be glad to meet with the immediate family or an immediate family member. And then it goes on. Over the past 2 years, we have repeatedly and publicly asked persons who are victims or who have information about victims to come forward. We respond promptly and sensitively to every such contact. Well, I guess you can be the judge if you think this response letter was sensitive or if you think that she had a right to think maybe she'd be given information. Because there'd be no reason to say that you'll meet with an immediate family if all you're going to do is tell them we're not going to talk about this. You know, that some of this just doesn't make any sense to me. And by the way, why am I talking about this? I'm talking about this because this was brought up through this personhood amendment. And this young man, you know, he deserved to be protected. And now his memory, we need to show that he has enough value that we're going to talk about this. And like I say, this was just sent to me, and I decided to talk about it on today's show because I think it's so vitally important. You know, Jesus told us to remove the plank from our own eye before we remove the speck from our brother's. And as a Christian community, we need to honor Christ, and we need to look at our own hypocrisy. And we need to think about what we're doing, and we need to quit making side deals with politicians and trying to strategize how we're going to win in a court that has shown its absolute hate for children. So we need to pay attention to honoring God in the work that we do. And we can start doing that by telling the truth and facing our own problems. Now, I want to go back over the questions and the answers. So here was the first question. See if you think this was legitimate and fair to ask. Was Neil Hewitt ever transferred or relocated as a priest to another parish after any accusation of sexual misconduct or abuse? Well, here's the answer. We respect the privacy of all persons involved. Question 2. When were you, the Catholic Church, first informed of accusations against Neil Hewitt regarding any sexual misconduct? Answer again. We respect the privacy of all persons involved. What was the nature of those accusations? Once again, we respect the privacy of all persons involved. Was Neil Hewitt ever investigated, and what were the results? In addition, what actions, if any, were taken? And once again, we respect the privacy of all persons involved. And this question, before this year, was Neil Hewitt ever reported to the authorities for this or any similar crimes? And once again, we respect the privacy of all persons involved. Can you believe that? Can you believe that anyone could write a letter when questions like this are asked that says something like, we respect the privacy of all persons involved? No, you shouldn't respect the privacy. That's a bad idea. You should either find out if these accusations are correct and report it to the authorities, make it public, look for other victims if there are any, or you should expose the accuser as being a false accuser and clear this guy's name. And yet there's nothing in this letter that would indicate you think it's not true or that there's something that's not legitimate about it. And once again, I have been reading this letter because it's so important that the church starts telling the truth about its behavior and that we honor God. By the way, let me read the end of the letter, the response letter. Be assured of my goodwill and prayers, sincerely yours in Christ, signed by Most Reverend Charles J. Chaput. And so, just think about this and pray for this family that they'll get the answers that they need. And also, Maranatha Christian Center. If you're thinking of sending your kids to a school, consider Maranatha. It's a great Christian school. And so, thanks for listening, and I'm sure we'll be following up on this story in the near future.
Bob's brother, Brian Enyart, has moved his home remodeling business, Fancy Schmancy Renovations, to Colorado. You can call Brian to improve the look and value of your home and support Bob Enyart Live at the same time. Brian has nearly 30 years of experience beautifying homes, so whether you're in the market for a new kitchen, a bathroom makeover, or a new front door, you'll be pleased with the results and happy to know that 95% of the proceeds will go directly to Brian's wife, Jennifer. Hey, that's me! And 5% of the proceeds will go to support Bob Enyart Live. So call Fancy Schmancy Renovations at 720-641-7033. That's 720-641-7033. Or visit us on the web at fancyschmancyrenovations.com.